Wollen wir mal irgendwie einen anderen Einstieg machen oder wollen wir genauso machen wie immer?
Wie könnten wir das anders machen?
Einfach anfangen zu reden oder so. Das machen ja viele Podcasts, dass man einfach so ein Thema einsteigt. Aber
können wir gerne, machen wir das diesmal.
Okay. Dann überraschen wir die Leute mal.
Genau, und dann schauen wir mal, was für Kommentare dann so kommen.
Hä? Did you get that?
I'm so confused.
Also ich verstehe nur Bahnhof.
You only understand train station? It's all Greek to me.
Understanding train station. Living between cultures with Josh and Phelan.
So it's midterm elections in the US and I was up pretty late watching the results, but we still don't really have results. Today that we're recording, I should probably say it's November 9th, so it's the day after the elections.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I guess technically we're still waiting on the results, so it's still a thing. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, here in the U.S., my brain is completely all over the place right now. Here in Germany, I haven't been following it that much. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more difficult with the time difference to stay up to date and then with work. Yeah. But I just was watching some ABC News about it earlier today to try to stay informed. But yeah, I guess there's a lot going on and it seems like it's not quite what everyone was expecting. So I'm intrigued to see how the cards fall in the end. But yeah, definitely a topic.
Which actually makes me think that I saw that someone said you should do another idioms episode soon, now that you just said how the cards fall in the end.
I don't even think you actually say how the cards fall. I think it's actually how the chips fall.
I don't know.
Just as I said it, I was like, that sounds a little weird. So let me know in the comments if it's chips or cards. I think it's chips. Now I have to look it up.
I wouldn't know. But yeah, back to the midterms. I was thinking that actually makes sense what you're saying, that you're not really paying attention to too much in Germany, because Germany is pretty big on American politics, I would say. And I think we've talked about this before. But in regards to the midterm elections, people don't follow it nearly as much as the presidential elections or other big topics or riots or protests that are happening. I mean, of course, like, people report about it, but the midterms always seem like this big kind of, like, this riddle, this mysterious thing that people don't really quite know who is elected, who is up for election, what is all decided. I mean, I think Germans overall know that it's about the Congress, so the American Parliament, and that it's important because in Germany, when we have elections, the parliament elections or parliamentary elections, is that what you would say? And the executive elections, so the chancellor is connected, right? We don't even vote for the chancellor directed. So like when the parliament changes, the chancellor changes as well. Yeah. Whereas in the US, those are separate things. Yeah, and that's why the midterms are always so important.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how in detail we should try to explain it right now, but generally, I mean, the president is president for 4 years, and then halfway through those 4 years are the midterm elections, which is mostly, it's the House and the Representatives, so the two bodies of Congress, or the two houses of Congress. However, it's not always all of them. So representatives from the House of Representatives, they serve 2-year terms, so every 2 years they have to get reelected.
So that's all of them. It's all of the House is being elected, yeah.
And then in the Senate, they serve 6-year terms. So not all of the senators are up for reelection, but a lot of them are. So
I believe it's about like a third of them. Mm-hmm. So that still like is a big change because one party could take over the Senate. And from what it looks like right now, the Republicans are taking over the House where the Democrats were dominant before. So things are changing. And then if the president has a different political party than the majority of the Congress, it makes it really hard for anyone really to make decisions, for the president to make any decisions. So that's always like this thing where we're kind of confused in Germany, like, how does this system make sense in the US? Like, of course, there is a lot of thought behind it when it was first established. But this term, like, of the lame duck, I think I've seen that on German media as well, that people talked about that, where it basically, if that were to happen, that both of the chambers go to the Republicans now and Biden is a Democrat, he would really be restricted in his governing in the next 2 years.
Yeah, it would be very, very difficult for him to pass anything in his agenda if he didn't have I mean, it's difficult if one of the houses of Congress aren't of the same party, but it's nearly impossible, especially nowadays with politics being so divided, to get anything done if you are a lame duck. Yeah. Which is funny, actually, that you brought that up, because at work recently, one of our managers quit, and he said, "But don't worry, guys, I'm not a lame duck." And he said this in German. I mean, he said he used
the lame ente.
No, but he said lame duck.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he said it all in German and then lame duck in English.
Okay.
It's
interesting.
So it was either he's just an aficionado when it comes to idioms or American politics, which is funny because I know he listens to this podcast, so I'm sure he'll tell me in the future. But
lame ente is actually also a term in German.
Oh, yeah?
I'm pretty sure. I am at this point in my life where I think we mentioned this recently, or we talked about it in private, where I kind of feel like I'm losing my Sprachgefühl, like the feeling for my first language, or even both languages. I don't even know. It's almost like sometimes I really, when you ask me a question, I'm like, I'm not quite sure, like a question regarding the German language.
German.
And but Lame Ent, I'm pretty sure that's a term that we would always use, not really, or at least I wouldn't connect it to a political context. I feel like that's something that kids use, for example, like du bist so eine lame ente, like you're just slow.
We wouldn't use it in that context ever. It's for us, it's very much a political term.
Germans, please correct me in the comments if that was completely wrong, but I'm 99% sure. In addition to the House and the Senate, and that's always something that like is so confusing to me, because you really have to look up in your state and in your county what else is up for election. But there's always other things. So in some states, they're electing their governor also, which is a big thing. Not in all states, though. And then I think in most states, they also have issues that they vote about. So amendments to add to the Constitution, to the state Constitution, that people get to vote yes or no. And that's kind of an interesting thing, because I know you guys have always have these really long ballots, and you really have to be informed beforehand, because otherwise you're going to be in the voting location and you're like, oh, I don't even know what any of this is. Whereas in Germany, we really just usually have to do two little crosses or two little check marks.
That's one of the advantages of voting by mail as well, is then you have a little bit more time with the ballot to explore or to do some research. You can obviously look at sample ballots before you go to the polling location or the voting location. There's a lot to vote for on American ballots.
And judges. I forgot that,
You vote for judges. You vote for local elections as well, normally take place at the same exact time. And election day isn't a holiday or on a weekend in the U.S., so that's another thing as far as voter participation is concerned. It's more difficult to vote. You have to work around your work schedule, so on and so forth. So, voting is a huge topic. I know we've covered it somewhat in the past as well.
We talked about the German elections last year, because we had the big elections.
These are just some Einblicke or insights into how things work in the U.S. But the ballot's super long.
Some of the issues is what I guess it's called officially that were voted about. What's the preposition to use here? Voted on. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For example, abortion laws in a lot of states. Like some states try to establish amendments about to restrict abortion access. Other states try to establish amendments to ensure abortion access. Another topic was legalizing marijuana. So a few topics that you saw in different states taking place at the same time. And then, of course, different states had different turnouts in the end.
No, it's interesting. Like, I used to be super into American politics, and I still enjoy staying informed, but I can tell that you are much more informed than I am right now at the moment.
I do live here, so it does affect me a little bit more right now probably than it does affect
you. We were just having a discussion in the office before I left today, because I work with some people who aren't German citizens either. They're European citizens, so it's easier for them to live in Germany. But we were having the discussion of if we should be allowed to vote in our home countries. There was a Turkish guy there that we were talking to, and how the Turkish diaspora are allowed to vote. I was talking with some Croatians as well, and they're allowed to vote, but they were like, well, we don't really know how if we feel like we should be allowed to vote, because we're not directly affected by by the decisions that the government makes. I was for voting on certain aspects of things because as a someone living outside of your country, I think it's important for you to have a voice in especially the international politics or, Außenpolitik. How do we say that in English?
Foreign affairs.
Yes. have a say in foreign affairs, because if something were to happen to me here while I'm abroad and not in the U.S., it's the United States government that has to take care of me or help me.
Yeah.
So I think that's important. And I won an argument in that with that. With that argument, but it's it's interesting when you live abroad, the different perspectives that you get from different people.
One thing that Ohio actually is getting rid of now, because it was one of those issues that they voted on, was if non-citizens are allowed to vote in local elections, because was a thing in Ohio. I never did it.
It was?
I had been told that before in the past, but like I didn't even know how to registered to vote, I guess, for local elections. I never really felt connected to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anything, I would have probably wanted to vote in federal elections. Local is, of course, super important, but I never did it. I missed my opportunity, I guess. And so now they, I guess, are getting rid of it anyways. So now it's going to be mandatory to be a citizen to vote, which is actually something that I never even was aware of before I moved here and before people told me about it, that it's possible at all to vote when you're not a citizen.
I know in Germany it's possible to vote if you're not a citizen. But not for federal elections. Mm-hmm. It's all, how do you say in German, Kommunalwahl? No.
Yeah.
We were talking about this at work. This is just pure information that I got from the discussion. This isn't verified, researched information. But like as far as voting for the mayor is concerned, foreigners are allowed to
see, interesting. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, but and I to be honest, I don't think that's a bad thing, especially if you have a permanent residency there, or even a short term residency. If your main residency is in an area, I think it's good to be able to have some input. As far as federal elections are concerned, or even state elections, I don't necessarily think I think that's a little bit more difficult. But for those things that truly affect you on such a local level, I think you should be allowed to have a say in it. But that's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I don't really have a strong opinion on it. I agree, that's a thing for me. Like, I live here. I told people on my Feely from Germany Instagram and, YouTube, I posted something about, hey, please go vote. And then there were a lot of people who really liked that I said that I just said voting is really important. Like, make sure that you know it's a privilege and it's important that you take advantage of that privilege. But then there were a few comments where it was like, oh, how ironic that you're trying to tell us what to do when you're not even allowed to vote. And it's like, if anything, that makes it even more relevant for me to tell you guys to vote, because I'm going to be affected by the outcome either way.
The decisions that you make,
Because I can't vote, that is true, but I am a resident here. So I am going to be affected by the outcomes and the laws and the restrictions. Mm-hmm. So I do agree that, residents should have some kind of say, at least in local elections. I agree with that. Maybe even on a state level. But that's then it gets complicated. Where do you stop it? And with what reasoning? Where is the limit there?
Yeah, I mean, you just get into all of these conversations. I'm thinking, one thing that we learned in school about the American Revolution was no taxation without representation. Mm-hmm. Was a big outcry, or one of the main cheers of, or battle cries, if you will, of the revolution. And for foreigners living in the U.S., you don't get representation, but you still have to pay taxes. So I don't know. Yep. I'm not saying I have the answer. I'm just saying it's an interesting thought.
Very much so. Yeah. Same with Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
They don't get to vote, right? Federally.
Not in federal elections.
But they have a governor.
They have a governor, and they have a representative in Congress, but it's a non-voting representative. So they can.
So weird.
Yeah, it's weird. But if I'm not mistaken, I don't think in Puerto Rico they pay federal income tax.
Oh, okay. Good.
But yeah, that's we're getting into details, and I want to be hesitant of
spreading wrong information. Gefährliches Halbwissen.
Exactly. But a completely different topic, if that's okay, unless you have something else to add to the midterms. String cheese. Do you know what string cheese is?
Is string cheese the stuff that comes out of a can, or is it just the thing that is in a plastic thing and you can pull it apart?
Yes.
Or is it neither?
It's the second one.
Okay.
So I go into the office today, and I work at an American company, and my coworkers are like, said to me, Josh, there's they knew an American was working here. There's something in the fridge for you. And I was like, okay, what does that even mean? They say, go look. And I just look in there. And then they like yell when I'm in, while I'm in the kitchen, it's look at this, look at the cheese. And it was string cheese, which I guess is not a thing here in Germany. I didn't realize that, but it makes sense. So for those of you who don't know what it is, it's basically like a, I don't even know how you would describe it. Like a
plastic artificial cheese. No, I'm just kidding. To Germans, it looks weird.
But I'm like, for me, I would call it like a little log of cheese. I don't know, like a cylinder. Yeah. That's, I don't know.
Yes, so eine Stange, so eine Lange.
Yeah, exactly. And you peel the cheese off. And they were watching me eat it because I wanted to try to see how authentic it was. It was pretty authentic. But I open it up and I just start peeling it. And one of them who's lived in the U.S., he did an exchange year there and has lived in the U.S. for a bit. He's like, only Americans know how to eat this cheese. No German would go and grab a cheese stick and start peeling it like you just did. He's like, that's proof that you are an American, because we would just bite right into it. And that is one of the biggest sins, I feel like, when it comes to string cheese. Sorry, I'm going on a rant right now, but I just thought it was a very funny conversation. Because, I guess that's just something that we grow up with knowing that you have to peel back, like peel off, how do you say it in German? The Strähne? No.
Strang vielleicht? Ja, Strähne gibt es schon auch das Wort. Das würde ich eher für Haare benutzen oder für...
Yeah, like strands. Yeah. Basically, you're pulling off strands
of cheese. Ja, so ein Strang, ja.
Yeah. But yeah, it just was funny that they were so excited that we had string cheese in the office. And then I work with someone who's like, she's half American and lived in the U.S. like in high school. And she went to she saw it there and came up to me too. I was like, Josh, they have string cheese.
See, for me, like, I think I've had that maybe once. That's like, not something that I would go to the store and buy. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's just because I haven't been Americanized enough. But I would maybe kind of compare that to like Babybel cheese. Like, it's kind of like an unnecessary, like, twist on cheese. Like, it seems pretty artificial, because cheese doesn't just do this, it doesn't form those strands itself, right? That's like manufactured like that. So I don't know, I've just like never thought of it as like, you know, a quality product or anything. I've always just thought of it as something that American kids grow up with. They think it's fun, and that's it.
It's something that's what I told them, is like, this is childhood for me. These were always in my lunchbox. Mm-hmm. Or like as a snack. And one of them tried it and thought it was one of the most disgusting things she's ever had.
Really?
Yeah.
But oh well, I honestly don't remember exactly what it tasted like. I just know that in my head, string cheese always has this association with like artificial, like unhealthy. Yeah. But that's the same thing. Is Babybel a thing in the U.S.?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Because like that's what I would think of in Germany. I know some kids always had that in their lunchbox, and then it's like fun to peel that, and like you can play with the wax.
Like I said, I digress, but I just thought it was a funny story kind of out of everyday life today, which I think is kind of gonna be generally the theme of this week's episode. We just want to answer your guys' questions. We posted on Instagram and kind of went through some of the YouTube comments and pulled some questions that you guys had for us. And
we're just gonna answer another Q&A episode. before we get into the questions, actually, I just wanted to make like a little service announcement. We don't have a sponsor this week, as you might have already noticed, but we are playing around with the ad feature on Spotify. So I believe it's just on Spotify. So like, if you have like an interruption in the episode and there's just an ad playing, just so you know, that's what that is. We just want to see how it works exactly, if that's something we would want to use in the future. If you guys hate it, that's okay. You can give us feedback on YouTube or on Instagram or via email. Feel free to do so. But yeah, just wanted to let you know what's happening with the ads this episode.
Thanks for updating everyone. With that, I say we should just go ahead and jump into the questions. So starting with the first question, Feli, what type of music do you like?
Oh gosh, haven't we answered that before?
Have we?
I don't know. I feel like I've answered that question a lot, because for some reason people always want to know that.
Yeah.
Okay, personally, it's really hard to say. I like everything that's not electro, like super hardcore, like techno or house music, or dubstep. That's not my thing. I like kind of everything that has instruments, so like real music. but that's also groovy. So
that's such a controversial thing to say, real music.
So like, yeah, you know, I mean. Like, I don't like super just like electronic everything, like just an electronic beat. Even though I do like hip hop also, which sometimes I guess has that, but I always like the hip hop songs more where they have like a guitar riff or something in it, if that makes sense. So it's kind of hard to like pinpoint my genres, but I would probably say like pop, but there's a lot of pop I don't like. I don't like the 1975, for example. I'm not the biggest fan of Taylor Swift. Like, I acknowledge that she makes good music, but it's not just not my type of music.
Taylor Swift is coming to Cincinnati, by the way, if you didn't know.
I did know that because it's like, I think she's running a lot of social media ads and it's kind of popping up everywhere. But yeah, so that's, for example, like not my favorite stuff, but everything that's like singer-songwriter, indie rock, rock, rock pop, rock punk, R&B, hip hop, that would be like my general genre. And I do listen to a lot of German music also. So like German hip hop, if you want to call it, even though German hip hop, the stuff that I listen to at least mostly is actually pop, but it's just like the vocals are just slightly different. Like thinking of, what do I like, Rin or Apache or Nina Chuba or stuff like that. That's like the stuff that I like. I don't really listen to like German gangster rap or anything like that. Yeah, I think that answers it. I know that was a long answer, but it's complicated.
I was going to say my answer won't be quite as long. I would agree. For me, I like the German stuff as well. Like I think of An in my Kantereit.
Yeah, or, I love that.
I am actually going to a Kraftklub concert Kraftklub. Here in Munich.
Awesome.
But that's not like, I would say generally what I listen to most of the time. I listen to a lot of Spanish language music, kind of like a reggaeton, but like, there's also kind of trap music that's like Latin. Bad Bunny is one of my favorite artists. I'm trying to think what else I listen to. I like Rosalía, not her newest album quite as much. And I just listen to a lot of pop. I'd say mostly pop music. What I really enjoy doing is going and listening to like the top 50 or top 100 on Spotify from various countries. So I'll do that with Mexico, with Spain. I also enjoy listening to French language music as well. So.
Oh, yeah.
Not like necessarily French. It's funny that there are a lot of French language artists that the French like to claim as their own, but they're actually Belgian. So like Stromae. I'm a big fan of Angèle. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else that's French that I like. I am not like super into techno-y or like electronic music. I enjoy it. I don't have anything against it. It's just not what I listen to at first, but there are some DJs. There's Polo et Pan, or Pon, or however you pronounce it in French. It's Polo and Pan. I enjoy listening to them. It kind of just eclectic. There's not much music that I don't like listening to. I like I like a lot of American R&B and rap as well, and like hip hop. But those aren't necessarily my go-tos. I listen to a lot of Spanish language music.
Yeah, I can confirm that. Because like whenever we were on vacation together, that's all you would play on the car.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
Like J Balvin. Yeah, I could go on and on.
You said your answer was going to be shorter, but...
Yeah, it wasn't.
For me, it's really hard to give you artists because I feel like maybe some people would be interested, especially in German artists, because there are so many. I really like German women also, like singer-songwriter women like Lea, for example, or Luna. They have kind of similar names. Those are two that come to mind right now. But there's a lot in that genre that I listen to. I like Machine Gun Kelly, for example.
Yeah.
One of my favorite artists of all times is Jason Mraz, who I don't really like his more recent music because it's, I don't know, it's kind of gotten a little bit soft. But his albums from like the mid-2000s, they're like super funky, groovy, and I've seen him live a few times and he's absolutely genius and amazing. So that's kind of the kind of music that I really, really like. Yeah. Someone asked, how does Josh like sales and his new company? New in quotation marks, because it says, I know it's been quite a while.
Yeah, I've almost been there. I'm coming up on a year now. Sales, it's interesting. I enjoy sales. I enjoy customer conversations. It's a little difficult because it's a lot of cold calling, my current position, and as far as business development and finding new customers.
Kaltakquise, right, in German. Yeah.
One thing, though, that I think I've noticed for myself or discovered for myself is, although I speak really good German, it's not something that I want to do in like Kaltakquise or cold calling in German, or even really too many customer conversations in German is not necessarily something I enjoy doing. I'm a perfectionist, and I don't feel like I can bring my best self to customer conversations all the time when it's in German. We did some internal pitch competitions recently, and we had the opportunity to do it in English versus German. And I did it in English, and I was like, wow, this is so much easier in English, and I'm so much better at this in English than I am in German. Like, I'm not bad in German. I'm a good performer for it. Like, I do a good job. But for me, it's just so much easier because I don't stumble on the language. It's more about the content, and I'm not self-conscious about my English. I'm self-conscious about my German though. So I think when it comes to work and sales, the sales activities themselves, I don't dislike, and I think I'm good at them and can do it. But I think when it comes to doing it in German, I can do it and I'm not bad at it. It's just not as fulfilling. It just feels like it's another step that's more difficult. So I'm super thankful that I have the opportunity to do a lot in English. And I'm actually going to be changing positions here soon away from customer facing into a more strategic role where I'll be working mostly in English.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that. But yeah. Sales, it's fun. I think what's difficult is there are peaks and there are valleys, and it's a lot of peaks and a lot of valleys. And I'm someone who likes stability more, so I'm looking forward to having a little bit more stability and not having to deal with the peaks and valleys quite as much.
Mm-hmm. I have one question. Do you think it's mainly just a language barrier, or do you think it's cultural too? That, like, what we always talk about with the different personalities and everything, because even I feel like I could sell something better in English, even though it's not my native language.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I think it's a little bit more difficult because I don't talk to American customers.
Mm-hmm. True.
All of my accounts are German. So
you would still
have
to comply with the German culture, even if you were to speak English with them.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I try to be as American as I can when I call people in Germany. Yeah. I always ask people how they're doing as one of my first questions, just to open up the conversation. And
are people surprised by that? Because, like, if I were sitting in a German office and I got a call and someone would ask me how I'm doing, I'd be like, gut, wieso? Yes.
Exactly. And that's kind of my strategy too, is because I don't think I necessarily have the language skills to have the upper hand in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like through asking that question, it kind of throws them off a little and then gives me a chance to win them over with my sympathische Art und Weise.
With your likable, how would you translate that?
With my likable self, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Way of doing things. I don't know. That's just my approach. At least that's what I tell myself.
Yeah. Okay, but cool. Yeah. That was very interesting, actually. And yeah, I mean, I already knew that you're switching positions, but
yeah,
no, everyone knows that. And it's a really cool step.
And like I said, I think probably a lot of it is my own self-perception. Like when I talk to sales leaders here after doing stuff in German, they're like, your German is so good. Like, I don't know why you keep saying that, but it's definitely my self-perception. And I think you can relate to that as well, is like, even if it doesn't come off as you, struggling isn't even the right word. It just is, it's just different. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely relate to it in terms of doing unexpected phone calls where I will be asked questions that I can't anticipate. I don't know what's going to happen because it's a phone call with an insurance or, you know, something big, adulting, taxes or something, where suddenly words are being thrown in there where you're, especially on the phone, where it's always a little bit more difficult to understand, where you're suddenly like, wait, hold on, what are we talking about right now? Where do I categorize this word? Can I guess the meaning out of context? Or you're just like, you know the word, but you didn't know it was used in this context. Stuff like that is definitely always a little bit intimidating. And then in those situations, it's also difficult to describe what you're trying to say, like filing an insurance claim or something like that. I had to do that for a roof for the homeowner's insurance. And there were definitely a lot of questions where I was like, hold on, can you repeat that? And the other person usually, like most of the American sales reps or like insurance people are pretty friendly and understanding and everything. But I'll still like hang up and I'll be like, whew, that was challenging.
Yeah. And then imagine having to try to convince someone to want to continue to talk to you.
Yeah.
But no, like I said, all in all, I think it's a lot of my self-perception as opposed to actual facts. But that's how I feel about sales at the moment. Who knows? The future may change that, but right now that's how I feel. No, this is a good question for you.
Okay.
It's not really a question the way it's written, but I think we can understand the question. Something cool and extraordinary that happened to you because you're podcasting, which I guess for you, it's a little bit more difficult to pinpoint it to podcasting.
I mean, I get to meet people sometimes. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. At Oktoberfest, we talked about that. There were a lot of people who recognized me. There was one girl that recognized me in Venice. That was also kind of unexpected and cool.
Yeah.
But I guess it's also, of course, nice to be invited to things and to be able to do collaborations with events or institutions. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I've collaborated with the German embassy before and kind of more official institutions. So that's always cool. Or like at the local Oktoberfest, at one of the local organizations here at Germania, for example, a lot of people recognized me, a lot of teachers. There were German teachers. And we're super excited to talk to me, and that's always really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But most of that, of course, is because of my channel.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I don't really know how to answer that.
Yeah, that's actually not... As I was reading it, then I saw the podcast, and I was like, that might be a little bit more difficult for Feely. I know for me, it's been cool slash weird to be recognized. I think I've talked about being recognized a couple different times, but
yeah, one time at work.
twice at work, actually.
Oh,
one of our new bosses started and he actually knew me from... See, that's the thing. I don't know if he knew me from the podcast or from the times I'd been on your channel, but either way. Yeah, I would say that's probably the coolest part of it. I don't think... Yeah, I mean, we're still a relatively small podcast, so it's not like there's really like these crazy things that happen with us, but it's something that we enjoy doing, and it's cool when you get those little moments where you're like, oh, people actually do listen to it. I think one thing that I and this isn't a plug for our Patreon, but one thing that I think is really cool is getting to have our once a month chat with our listeners and build a little community with them. And like, they're from all over. We had someone from Australia. We had someone, I mean, we have Germans, we have Americans. It's a fun little group. And that's something that I didn't necessarily expect when I started, or when we started this, was getting to have those cool chats with them.
Yeah. I also would just say, like, a cool part of podcasting is getting to have our guests on the podcast and have these, like, deep conversations, even sometimes with people that we already knew beforehand, that were friends or roommates or coworkers. And then you suddenly talk about things that you never really talked about in, like, your private life, because it's, like, kind of a deep topic and deep question. So, I mean, that's definitely something that I really appreciate. Okay, next question.
Yes.
You ready? Will you watch the Soccer World Cup?
Yain. I mean, like, I don't think I'm going to watch a ton of it. I think part of it, with it being in Qatar, it's... I don't know. There isn't necessarily as much of a cultural connection for me, I guess, compared to where it's been in the past. I don't know. I just don't have a ton of connections with Qatar, so I think it's... That plays into it. It's also during the winter, which I think that probably plays more into it than it being in Qatar, that it's just, I mean, it's cold outside. And that's weird to be, like, you're used to the, at least we in, I guess, the Northern Hemisphere are used to the World Cup being in the summer and being able to go outside and watch games at bars or at public viewing areas. And that's not going to be the case this time. But I'm sure when Germany's playing, I'll watch. And with my friends, if France, for example, is playing, I'm sure I'll watch too. But I don't have, I'm not like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for the World Cup this year. I don't know. How do you feel?
I mean, for those of you guys listening who aren't really aware of this, this is a pretty controversial topic in Germany for sure. I haven't really heard a lot of Americans discuss it a lot, but at least in Germany and other European countries, it's something that's being discussed a lot. And a lot of people basically say that you're supposed to boycott it and not watch it at all, even if you're interested in soccer, because of the conditions in Qatar and the way that they got the World Cup location. There was, you know,
some
bunch
shady
of corruption
business.
And money, and it's not really a country that is ideal to host a World Cup. That's also why they had to move it to the winter, because it's like in the desert, and there's just a lot of, you know, controversial issues there. They believe that being homosexual is a mental illness and all these kinds of just human rights issues. So on that regard, I think I would probably be more team boycotted, but at the same time, I am not a big sports person anyways.
Yeah.
So to me, it's kind of like easy to say because like I wasn't really going to watch it anyways. And I usually did watch the World Cup back when I lived in Germany because like it's a huge thing there in the summer usually. As you say, like you go to public viewings and you like watch it with your family and friends. And that is like the one thing of sports that I would usually watch, and I would usually watch every single Germany game. Yeah. But this year, it just doesn't seem like a regular World Cup, as you said.
Yeah.
It just seems like a different kind of event. So I'm not even sad about not being home or missing it.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to watch it.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I'm not that interested in soccer.
Exactly.
And just, like, being here by myself, I'm not really going to be, you know, too involved in how Germany is doing, I think. I'm sure I'm going to still hear about it because I'm sure Germans are still going to care. And I'm sure it's going to be all over social media and everything. But I do believe that it's definitely less people who are going to watch it closely this year than usually.
That seems to be the vibe that I've been getting as well.
Yeah, there's not this like hype for it. A lot of people, even in Germany, didn't even really know that it was happening this winter because like it hasn't been this big event that everyone was waiting for.
So moving on to the next question. Have you ever met celebrities?
Do you want to answer first?
I mean, I have one story I can tell about or talk about. Which,
okay.
Do you know which one I'm going to tell?
No. Oh, yeah. It took me a second. Did it take place in Chicago?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
This was back when I was in college, I guess. There were some European exchange students at my university, and we decided to do a weekend trip. I was friends with them. Do a weekend trip to Chicago, and we were on one of the beaches. I forget which beach it was, but we were walking along the beach, and a guy drives past us on his bike with like a hat on and a backpack and everything. And I was like, oh, wait, like, I think I know who that is. And I told my friends, like, I think that was Bastian Schweinsteiger. And they're like, no way, you couldn't tell. Like, he drove past us on his bike. How is that Bastian Schweinsteiger? And I knew that Bastian was playing for Chicago Fire at the time. So it would make sense that he was in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So then one of them just yelled, Bastian! And then he like turns around and waves to us. And like, he just keeps driving or riding his bike. But of course, we're not going to give up that easily. So we kept walking and we saw that he had like pulled off to go to the bathroom somewhere. So it's very cringe in hindsight, but we waited for him like outside of the bathroom and then took a picture with him, and he was super nice about it. I mean, we tried not to take up too much of his time. We just said hi and asked if we could take a picture, and we took a quick picture. And then at the end, it was embarrassing because one of our friends called him Sebastian, which is not his name.
Mm-hmm. It's just Bastian.
It's just Bastian. He's not the end of the world. I'm sure he's gotten it a lot, but it just was, that was a fun experience.
Yeah. Usually he's just referred to as Busty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then other than that, as far as meeting celebrities, Cincinnati has a pretty big tennis tournament that takes place every year. And since I grew up playing tennis and was kind of involved in that world, I got to volunteer at one of the practice facilities for them. So I was like passing out towels and water to them as they needed it. So I got to see a couple people up close that, if you're familiar with the tennis world, I don't know if you would say, but interact with, like, Sam Stosur and who else is there? I don't know. There were quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily like the big, big names like Roger Federer or Rafael Nadal. Unfortunately, I got to see them play in person, but not really interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to think, I don't think I have any other celebrity experiences. What about you, Feli?
I can't really think of like a lot of celebrity experiences either. It also kind of like depends like who is a celebrity. But
exactly.
I guess like,
how do
if
you
you're talking
celebrity?
About like big names, I guess like the one that I've definitely met that I can think of now that is a big name that I've talked to and everything is Jürgen Drews. And he's like the biggest Schlager singer in Germany.
Okay.
So every German knows this name. But yeah, other than that, I on our flight out of Cincinnati and back to Cincinnati this past trip, Ben and I, when we went to Europe, both times we had celebrities, you could say, on our flights and hanging out around us at the gate. So like on the flight there, So at the Cincinnati airport, there were two Cincinnati Reds players right in front of us in TSA. And then they also ended up on our plane to Chicago.
Oh, cool.
Which I, of course, didn't know them at all before. Yeah. But Ben was freaking out. And so I do remember the names because we talked about it a lot afterwards. And I looked them up and stuff.
Who were
and
they?
It was Joey Votto and Tyler Stevenson's.
See, I don't know Tyler Stevenson's, but Joey Votto is definitely a name that I know.
Yeah, he talked to me because he was right in front of me at the little scanner, and he had to go backwards to like grab his bag or something. And I just said like, "Oh, excuse me." He said, "You're good."
I had a whole interaction.
Yeah, but I didn't even know who he was. So like,
I was gonna say I had a similar situation at an airport with another person that if you're in the tennis world, you would probably know. His name is Darren Cahill. He's a commentator, and I was sitting in the airport in Detroit waiting to board my flight to come, I think, to Munich. And he was in the flight as well. And I saw him sitting around. I didn't go up and talk to him because he was eating. And I was like, I don't want to disturb him. But yeah, airports are fun like that. Any other experiences?
Well, then on the flight back, when we flew through Toronto on the flight back, so like Munich, Toronto, and then from Toronto to Cincinnati. And on that flight from Toronto to Cincinnati, at the gate, I like kept seeing this girl. I was like, she looks like that one girl from TikTok. Her name's Jax, and she is big on TikTok. She does these videos where she sits down with the kid she babysits, and she basically makes, like, story songs. Mm-hmm. And then I think she also was on American Idol at some point, and recently she had a huge hit with this song called Victoria's Secret. So Victoria's Secret. I know Victoria's Secret. And girl, you wouldn't believe she's a white man who lives in Ohio, or an old man who lives in Ohio, something like that. And it's been, like, a really big like song that was in the charts and everything. I looked up her social media and it just so happened that she had a TV thing in Toronto early that day. So I was like, that is her. And she's wearing the same clothes. And I didn't talk to her though, because I was feeling really, really shitty. I was kind of sick on the flight home.
Oh, no.
It didn't turn out to be COVID, but I had like the worst sore throat and I was just dead. And our flight had like 2 hours delay and I was just in that seat. And I just wanted to get home and I was wearing my mask. And I felt like this is not the right time to like go up to a celebrity or a person. I wanted to tell her that I really like her work and I really like that song and the message and everything that's behind it. Mm-hmm. But because the song is all about like basically why you shouldn't comply with like these made up beauty standards where it's like they're trying to sell skin and bones and big boobs is like one of the lines of the songs. But yeah, that was like two recent things, encounters that I had, I guess.
Maybe another anecdote. We're talking about flying now. I don't think I've talked to you about this yet, but I've booked my flights back for Christmas or for Cincinnati for Christmas, and they were so expensive going from Munich that I'm actually going to fly from Paris, which I'm really excited about. So I'm going to take a train
with the direct flight.
Yeah, so I'm going to take a train to Paris the day before and then stay with some friends there. And
That's
then
awesome.
It's going to be so nice just to wake up. The flight doesn't leave until the afternoon. So I wake up, I just go to the airport, get on the plane, and then I get off the plane and I'm in Cincinnati.
That's awesome.
Wait.
Yeah, so and nice, like immigration hopefully. Is going to be super quick in Cincinnati because it's just that one flight that is international.
I mean, it's quick for me anyway because I have global entry, but
true.
Actually, Cincinnati doesn't have global entry, so it'll probably be longer for me than I'm used to.
Yeah, but it'll just be that one
plane
that's coming in. That's really cool.
Yes.
Here's a question that someone had regarding the episode with Ben where we talked about the traveling and everything. And they wanted to know, may I ask what an average 2-week trip to Europe would run in US dollars? I long to see Germany, the Vatican, and Rome. Greece, Spain, France, but I would die to do a Viking cruise to the northern Scandinavian countries. I would love to see the beautiful landscapes of Norway and Sweden. I'm a man of nature and love the natural beauty of Europe, rather than the man-made wonders of Europe.
Well, if you want to see all of that, it's going to be a very expensive trip. I don't know. That's hard for me to say. I'm trying to think.
Yeah, it really depends on, like, he said a 2-week. Yeah, 2-week trip. Yeah, it depends on your standards. It depends on the cities you go to and the countries, like heavily on the countries. Because there are some countries in Europe that are extremely cheap, like in the eastern part of Europe, for example. And, of course, it also depends on all of your activities that you do.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many variables, but I think you can have a really nice 2-week trip for like $2,000, I would say, between $2,000 and $2,500, between $2,300, depending
on
where.
Would you say that's with the flight or without the flight?
With the flight. I would say it depends, obviously, on where you're flying from in the U.S. If you live in New York, for example, you're going to get probably better flights and cheaper flights to Europe than you would from somewhere in the Midwest, where you're going to have to probably change flights and have a layover. Or even if you're on the West Coast, it's going to be more expensive. So that's that all plays into it.
But also, like, what time of the year you're going. Because as Josh just said, going, like, flying on Christmas, especially this year, is, like, extremely expensive.
It's crazy.
But if you fly off-season, for example, so not maybe in August or July, but rather in the fall or, like, earlier in the spring or something like that, you might get things a lot cheaper, both the flights and the hotels and everything, probably.
Yeah, and I think if you, like, obviously, depending on where you're going and if it's a country that's known for its cooking, or it's cuisine, then you want to eat out a lot. But if you can eat in a couple meals or eat something small for breakfast or stay at a place where they have a continental breakfast or a complimentary breakfast, and then that way you're not eating out quite as much. There are things that you can do to make it more cost effective. Or don't go on big tours that cost money. Do some research in advance to figure out what's the free stuff that you can do.
100%. I mean, it also depends on how you're traveling, if you're traveling alone, and also, I guess, your age, or at least what you're comfortable with, because, like, a lot of young Europeans just travel and stay in hostels where they meet other young people, which is super cheap, but also really nice, because then you actually meet people that you can continue your travels with. Mm-hmm. You can take night trains instead of, you know, driving or flying or traveling more expensive. So there's always ways to make it cheaper. And the good thing is that public transportation is really good within Europe. So you're not going to have to rent a car or anything like that or do everything by plane. But it really just depends on, you know, how comfortable you want to be. Sometimes traveling cheap definitely means a few having to make a few sacrifices here and there.
Yeah. But like I said, if you are willing to make some sacrifices and aren't wanting to stay in five-star hotels and eat in five-star restaurants every night, I think you can have a good trip for between $2,000 and $3,000.
Yeah. One thing that I kind of noticed, and that might be like a financial difference or also just a difference in regards to Americans not traveling quite as much, is that I feel like a lot of Americans, when they do make it to Europe, they want to stay at these like super central places and super central hotels in a city. So like, they don't want to be outside of the city limits and then having to take the bus or anything like that. Like, for example, we both just went to Venice, right? And we both stayed in Venice. Most of my other German friends or families would all stay outside of Venice and then take the bus in to see the city during the day, right? And staying inside of Venice is definitely more expensive. And I do feel like maybe it's because, as I said, Americans feel like they've been waiting their whole lives to finally go to Europe, and then they want to make it worth it. But also maybe it's just the spending habits that are a little bit different here. Mm-hmm. But it's always possible to go a little bit cheaper than what you think.
Yeah.
If that's what you're looking for. If you're looking to save money, stay a little bit outside and you'll be able to take a bus or a train or something inside the city or to the place that you want to go.
Exactly.
Okay, I have a question that is a little bit older, but I think it's very interesting. And I'm not 100% sure if we've answered this before. I hope we haven't answered it before. I don't really remember talking about it. But the question is, I do have a question to both of you about your non-native language skills. Do you fully comprehend social criticism, irony, and sarcasm, and the humor behind it in TV shows? In parentheses, I only know German formats like Heute Show and Die Anstalt, both being aired on ZDF. I'm not familiar with satire and cabaret being popular in the US, but I may be mistaken. I haven't been to the US for a couple of years. That's a really interesting question, because like the whole humor topic is definitely something that I know people are interested in. And a lot of people just assume that Germans don't have any humor and aren't funny and don't understand humor. So what's your answer to that?
I mean, they're not funny and they don't have any humor at all.
Okay, cool.
No, I mean, I would say I understand. I went to a comedy show recently. I think I talked about it, actually, maybe in the podcast.
Yeah,
or maybe it was in the Hangout. And I understood probably, I'd say 98-99%, even when there was satire and irony that was used a lot, and sarcasm. I think I think I pick up on pretty much all of that. Of course, sometimes mm-hmm. you're in situations where like, okay, did this person actually mean this as an ironic statement, or was that truly what they were saying? But no, I feel like I feel very confident in being able to understand that in German. Mm-hmm. What about you?
I feel like it really depends on the comedy, because maybe that's sounding a little bit arrogant. I don't know, but I feel like a lot of American comedy is pretty simple.
Yeah.
And doesn't go very deep. And so a lot of that is pretty easy for me to understand, because it's just about, you know, relationship patterns or funny stories at the office or penis jokes. I don't know. Like a lot of the comedy that I have seen so far in the U.S. is definitely easy to understand for me. But then there's also, of course, situations where it goes a little bit deeper and there are references to something. And we've talked
exactly.
about this in the past.
It's the references that get me.
If there are references to political things that I'm not aware of, pop culture that I'm not aware of, any type of just name dropping for like a person that everyone knows what that is supposed to mean now and I'm completely lost, or a show or an event, those are all things where, you know, I'm going to be lost. And it's not necessarily a language issue. It's more just like a knowledge. I'm lacking the cultural knowledge
exactly.
there.
Exactly. I was referring more to the language in my response, but I would 100% agree with what you said as far as if there are references that I just don't know because I didn't grow up with that culture, then it's more difficult for sure.
Yeah.
But generally, I would say for the most part, I'm able to understand it. And I do know quite a bit of the cultural references, but every once in a while, there's something that I don't know. It's not related to satire, but I recently realized that Airheads don't exist in Germany. You know the candy mm-hmm. Airhead?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Ovid. I don't know if I've ever had it.
Because in the office, they had the German equivalent of it. Fritt is okay. the name of it. Do you know what Warheads are?
No.
It's a really, really sweet candy. We have these at work too. I don't know why we have so much candy at work. but it's a really, really sour candy that it's like a small little round thing.
Okay.
And there was a German version of it too that they got me.
Okay.
You don't know Warheads?
I definitely know that there's like the super sour stuff that's like people do it as a challenge. Is that what it is? Or
I don't think so.
I don't know, Josh. I'm not big on candy except for chocolate and cookies.
Okay. I mean, neither am I. These are all things just from my childhood.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good example of how like the things that people don't think about necessarily being like so identified with their culture that you just take for granted as something that everyone knows.
Right.
And then you're in a situation where everyone knows something and you have no clue what they're talking about.
Yeah.
That's when it's like, okay, actually, I do have a big lack of knowledge in some areas. Faili,
mm-hmm.
do you plan on pursuing U.S. citizenship?
Maybe. I don't really have like a set plan for that. I would have to wait a little bit longer. I think, that's the thing. I don't even know the exact details, but I want to say it's 5 years after you get your green card that you have to have lived here permanently. And then I think is when you can first apply for American citizenship. But then I would never give up my German citizenship. So I would have to address the German embassy first and the German government and ask for my Beibehaltungsgenehmigung, so like asking that I'm getting an exception and allowed dual citizenship. So that's all like something that I haven't really thought about or dealt with. That's something that future Feli is going to decide on. And I wouldn't mind having dual citizenship. Like I feel like there's only perks with that. So if, you know, time comes and that is an option for me, I would probably do it. As long as I can keep my German citizenship. I would never give up my German citizenship, so.
Makes sense, I mean, the only negative I feel like is if you were to leave the U.S. again, you would always have to fill out a U.S. tax return. But other than that, it's mm-hmm. really not that bad.
True, yeah.
Interesting.
But, yeah, see, so I haven't really, like, sat down and thought about it or, because, like, Ben and I have mentioned before that we're probably trying to move to Germany at some point, and that would maybe interfere with that plan of, like, being here consistently. And that's just not really something where I'm like, okay, I have to be here for 5 years at a time to make sure that I can get that citizenship. It's not really something that, like, that's top priority for me.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's not necessarily important. It would be nice to have if it works out that way, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not something that's influencing your decision making at the time.
No. And it's not like I'm here in order to become an American citizenship. Like that's my master plan or anything like that.
Yeah.
No.
makes sense.
How authentic is Mexican food in Munich? For example, Condesa at Münchner Freiheit. And that's interesting because that's the restaurant that Samer recommended when he was on the podcast. So that was like almost 2 years ago at this point. I'm going to link the episode. He's a coworker of yours who's from Mexico, lives in Cincinnati, but has lived in Munich before.
Yeah.
So he said that there is authentic Mexican food and that that restaurant is actually one of those.
I don't know if he, that might be making an extreme, hello, English. That might be making an extreme statement. It's the closest thing to it. I mean, it's good. It's tasty. But I would say most of the Mexican food I have here is just, like, it's, like I said, you can eat it. It's nice. It's reminiscent of Mexico. But it doesn't compare. It doesn't compare. Probably, like, I know you talk about Italian food in Cincinnati a lot or in the U.S. compared to actual Italian food. It's probably very similar. It evokes feelings of Mexico, especially Condesa, because they have, I think it's Mexican owned, and they have quite a few Mexicans that work there as well. So, like, there's a vested interest in trying to make it more Mexican, I would say. There are a couple other places too that I've heard of that I haven't been to yet in Munich that I hear are relatively authentic. This is being said by Germans who have lived in Mexico, done exchange semesters in Mexico, so on and so forth. Like, I know there's a place near Izatua where apparently they have really good chilaquiles, which I need to go try. But I wouldn't say it's like super authentic. It's, like I said, reminiscent.
Yeah, that's exactly what I always compare it with, that that's how Mexican food is in Germany. Like, we're just far away from Mexico. We don't have a lot of Mexicans living there, and we don't really have a good idea of Mexican cuisine. So, like, you can sell Germans Mexican food and they're gonna be like, oh, that's amazing, and it's really not at all what people eat in Mexico. Or, like, you'll go to, like, kind of these bars that we have where it's Sausalitos, for example, is a
that's
chain.
That's not authentic.
Or what's the one at Münchner Gisela Straße where it's like right at the corner?
Yeah, it's
Don something.
Yeah, I forget exactly what it's called.
And I used to go there a lot for like cocktails and stuff like that. And then they would have Mexican food in quotes on the menu. And, you know, you would order chips and salsa, and it's just not even salsa. It's some weird ketchup sauce.
It's horrible. It's
which,
so
of course,
bad.
I never knew about before I came to the U.S. Because, like, in the U.S., you get pretty authentic Mexican food compared to Germany, at least. And then I was like, oh, Mexican food is amazing. Before that, I always just thought, I don't know what people like about Mexican food.
Oh, Feli, you have to go to Mexico and have, like, real Mexican food, too. Because in the U.S., it's good. In Mexico, it's out of this world. But that's also how I felt about Italy, too.
Well, Samer actually said that he felt like a lot of the Mexican food in the U.S. is even better because he feels like the good ingredients are being sent to the U.S. instead of being used in Mexico itself.
He did say that. I think also part of what goes into a food experience is not only the food itself, but the environment and the ambiance goes along with it. So even if the food is like really, really good in the U.S. as far as Mexican food, it's you still are in Cincinnati.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Like, so I think the whole package of being in Mexico, having like a really good taco or something, it's just a different experience. And like I said, it's the same thing that I experienced when I was in Italy. Like, I'm sure you have, as far as quality is concerned, very, very similar in Germany, but you're in Germany.
Yeah, I would actually confirm that. Like, I feel like personally, the Italian food in Munich, at least, if you go to the right restaurants, is the exact same as in Italy. But you're, of course, lacking the experience and the...
Exactly.
I mean, it can be super nice to sit outside of Munich as well. Munich is beautiful. But you're not going to be in Italy eating that pizza or that pasta.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never really judge it from meat. So that's always, like, a big thing for me with, like, when people ask me about food authenticity, even, like, here with German food. It's like, I feel like a lot of it is... You can judge it by the meat dishes.
Yeah.
And I can't judge that because I don't even know what they're supposed to taste like in Germany. And I've never tried them here. So I can really only ever judge it based on, like, you know, the pizza, the pasta, the quesadillas, the vegetarian burritos, the, you know, those kinds of things.
Which
I feel like if you eat like shrimp or meat or any like other kind of animal products, it might even give you a better idea of like the quality difference there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'm just thinking about Mexican food and how badly I want a good mole.
It's what depressing. Is that? Mole, that's something... like guac?
No. Or... Oh, God. No. No, Feli.
I was like, what?
Oh, no. Like, mole, it's like a type of sauce, okay. which has a whole bunch of ingredients in it. It's a very, very complex dish, which I think, at least in Ohio, it's difficult to get a good mole. Probably in the South, it's easier. And then in Mexico, it's just delicious. So our second to last question that we're going to answer is regarding bureaucracy. And the question is, what is more difficult, or which is more simple? A tax return, filling out a tax return in Germany or in the US? And I haven't filled out, or sorry, I asked, you're answering the question.
I mean, you were about to say that you haven't filled one out in Germany. I think that's part of the answer, is you don't really have to fill one out in Germany. You can. In a lot of situations, it might be the smarter thing to do to fill one out, even if you don't have to. But if you're a regular employee, so like in the US, if you were on a W-2, you don't actually have to fill one out. It's just all handled automatically in the background. So your taxes are being taken out automatically from your paycheck, and that's pretty much it. That's all you have to do most of the time. With that being said, I have filled them out in Germany before because I was on a like self-employment status there before while being a student. So it was kind of complicated. And in the US, of course, I had to fill them out from the very beginning as a student here. And it was always the most complicated thing.
Even as a student? So,
yeah. Everyone who is in the US, even as a non-resident alien, you have to fill out a tax return.
Even if you don't have any income.
Well, when I didn't have any income, it was easy. But then when I had my master's, I had income.
Okay, and yeah.
It was pretty complicated. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and I mean, the U.S. tax returns get complicated because my understanding in Germany is when you fill out a Steuererklärung, you only do one. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Whereas yeah, with like different attachments. But yeah, it's just one.
Whereas in the U.S., you have to do a federal tax return. You have to do a state tax return. And then depending on what municipality you live in, you have to do a local tax return. Mm-hmm. So if you lived, for example, within the city limits of Cincinnati, that means you have to do a Cincinnati tax return, an Ohio tax return, and a federal tax return. And there's software that helps you, like TurboTax or whatever, not sponsored, helps you do the state and the federal, but not the local. So the local one is like you print out a piece of paper and you have to fill it out and then send it into the city.
Yeah. And everyone, as I said, in the US has to fill one out. And that's just like a pretty big difference. And then they really don't make it easy. So there's a lot of people. I mean, I really don't know how true that is, but a lot of people say that this is kind of on purpose in the US, that they created a whole industry where then people need to pay for these services and for accountants because it's impossible for them to really understand how to fill it out correctly, especially if you're in a situation where you don't just have one job and you're not just on one W-2, but maybe you have several jobs and then you have kids and dependents and investments, and it can get pretty complicated with what you have to fill out how. Exactly. So a lot of people end up paying money to even fill out their tax return.
And like, it just gets so complicated because I remember I worked in one county, but not like... There were different county taxes that got taken out, and I could get money back because I actually didn't live in that county. I just worked in it. Sometimes what can happen, too, is if you live on the border between states, you have to sometimes fill out tax returns in both states, depending on which type of agreement there is between the states themselves.
Yeah, like in Cincinnati, where like you worked in Kentucky, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But there's an agreement between Ohio and Kentucky that you fill out the tax return in the state that you live in.
Yeah,
so it gets
crazy.
Very complicated, but life is very simple when you live and work in the same city with one job that you're employed at and have zero investments.
Yeah, then you can do it all by yourself for sure. And I'm sure you can do it by yourself if you take a lot of time and do the research. But I would definitely answer this question by saying the American tax return is much more complicated. That was the question, right? Yeah. Well, which one is easier? The German one is easier, I would say. Of course, German people also have Steuerberater. That is also definitely a profession. But the industry just isn't nearly as big, and not nearly as many people need those services. Mm-hmm. So the last question for you, Josh, is, Does Josh see himself living in a different European country than Germany?
Do I see myself living there? Possibly. Yeah, I think I could. Yeah, I think I would enjoy that. I think the countries that come to mind would either be maybe France, even though I don't speak French yet fluently. But most realistically, and the funny thing is I haven't been there before, but just from the Spaniards I know, or from the people I know, just as far as cultural aspects that I think that I would really enjoy, I think it would be really interesting to live in Spain for a while and have some experiences there. It's easiest because I speak the language, it's further south, so it's warmer. And as far as the people are concerned, more relaxed, yeah, just a different a different approach to life as opposed to the Germans. So I think it would be interesting to experience that for a time. I think I would enjoy it there.
Yeah. Do you have any actual plans to do that at some point?
Not at this point. At this point, I think what might be most realistic is maybe me moving to Ireland at some point. Just because that's, as far as the tech industry that I'm involved in, that's where a lot of companies are based out of for their European headquarters. But it's also a country I haven't visited before. So as far as like my travel plans are concerned, the top of my list is Spain and Ireland, not only because I want to experience both countries, but also to see if I could picture myself living there at some point.
Yeah. Well, Ireland, I can definitely tell you, especially Dublin, that I know even Germans struggle with the weather there.
Yeah.
So like that would definitely be a very harsh contrast to like your life in Spain.
Yes, exactly. So I think that there's lots of factors that go into making a decision like that. But right now I'm happy in Germany and don't have any plans on moving anytime soon.
Awesome. I know this was supposed to be the last question, but now that we just talked about this, I remembered, and I don't know where this was, maybe in the YouTube comments, I saw a question where someone asked me if I have ever planned on moving to another U.S. state. So maybe just like since we're already talking about it. Yeah, I don't know where it was. I can't find it now.
I think it was on Instagram.
For me, kind of yes and no. I mean, I have considered it, of course, because like after I was done with my master's and everything, I could have moved anywhere.
Yeah,
and
I remember you were talking about it.
Yeah, and like I did think about it, and the option is always there. I mean, it's there now too. I could do that. And there have been a few different like occasions where I thought about, like, for example, Ben was thinking about taking another job in another state at some point. And then I was thinking about, you know, do I maybe just want to experience something else in the U.S.? And I do really like California, but then again, it's like so expensive there. So at the end of the day, I never had actual plans to move somewhere else. And just for the reason that I couldn't really find a lot of reasons to do so. Like, of course, it's cool to live in other places, but I've seen a lot of the U.S. and I still want to see more. But that's kind of enough almost for me. I don't have to move to a place to get an idea of what it's like. And I've just never like had that craving. Like, I really want to live there. And like, I would move to California if it was the same prices as here.
Yeah.
And just as easy to like, you know, have a house and stuff like that. But that's just not the case. Like if you live in San Diego or LA or San Francisco, it's going to be extremely expensive. And I don't know if that would be worth it for me to then be like in that nicer weather and by the beach or something like that. It would really have to be worth it for me. So
do you think that
it would
moving,
be so far away?
I was going to say, do you think that moving far away as far as like moving west would be... Is there a negative associated with it because it's then longer to get back to Germany and more of a time difference, or does that play into your thought process at all?
No, I wouldn't think that at all. I would feel like culturally, I would almost think it's closer to home.
Yeah.
And if I were to choose a coast, for me, it would probably be more the West Coast than the East Coast. But no. I never thought about it like being further away from home. I'm already so far away from home, it doesn't really make a difference at this point.
No, I just was wondering.
But answering the question, I really never seriously thought about it. I mean, I thought about it, but never seriously had any plans or considered it or I was never looking into apartments or jobs anywhere else. So
Makes
I just
sense.
Never had the desire. I really like it here. It's kind of all I need. And many people don't understand that, but I like that I was able to buy a house, that I like that I have the space. I like the relaxness. The relax.
The relaxedness.
No. I don't know that it's so relaxed here.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, just like city vibes and lots of people like that. You just don't have that as much in Cincinnati. So yeah, that's just my answer for that, I think.
I think that's a completely legitimate answer.
That was our very last question. The question before that was the last question. This is the very last question. And now we're done with our episode. If you guys want to ask us questions too, you can do so now in the YouTube comments, because next time we do this, we usually try to ask you guys on Instagram, but we also always look through the YouTube comments as well. So if you have a question, like, just leave it underneath this episode now, and we're going to come back to this episode next time and check if there are any cool and interesting questions that we could talk about. We hope you guys enjoyed it. If you have any comments also on the topics we talked about, feel free to discuss those in the comments as well, or reach out to us on Instagram, via email, as I said, on YouTube, or of course on Patreon, patreon.com/understandingtrainstation, where you can support us and become part of this Patreon community, but you can also message us there. And yeah, I know there were a few topics, like the World Cup, for example, the elections. I'm sure there's some plenty, material to talk about.
I was going to say, there's plenty to talk about, both in on the Patreon hangout and also in the comments. Yeah. So let the dogs out, and we'll see what happens. Cool. Well, I guess that's it for this week then. Thanks for listening. We enjoy these Q&As too, because it's just a nice way to mix things up. So we hope that you guys enjoyed it and had some fun listening to our answers. We will talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Tschüss.
Ciao.